I'm Joe Wood, and I believe.
November 28, 1980, Todd Morton, West Yorkshire. Police Constable Alan Godfrey is out checking reports of cattle wandering around a local council estate. As he approaches the estate, he sees a bright light above the road ahead. Later, he describes it as a hovering, rotating object. What happens next remains unclear to Godfrey. At the time, all he could say was that he had lost 25 minutes of time, suffered a split boot and an itchy red mark on his foot, and the object was gone. It took professionally administered hypnotic regression to help him recall being medically examined by an alien being.
A couple of weeks ago, I attended my very first UFO convention, and I had such an amazing time. It was called the Awakening UFO Conference in Salford. I met a lot of interesting people, from speakers to ordinary people in the audience, and they all had great stories. So today's show is all about my day out at Awakening. I'm here at the Awakening Festival with David Childress, who I'm a great fan of. Amazing to see how many books you've done. You've done lots of books, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm the author of over 30 books.
Yeah.
And I wrote my first book in 1984.
Oh my goodness.
And it was a book called A Hitchhiker's Guide to Africa and Arabia.
Yeah.
And then I started writing the Lost Cities books.
Yeah.
My Lost Cities series of lost cities around the world.
Yeah.
And around the same time I started bringing out my anti-gravity books about Nikola Tesla.
Love Nikola.
Tesla.
I'm a big fan of his. I mean, such an underrated man. Now we're only just beginning to realize how brilliant he was.
Well, yeah.
Well, I am anyway.
Well, that's right. He's really a suppressed person in a sense, as a scientist. So many people learn about Nick. They learn that Otis invented the elevator and Edison invented the phonograph and stuff. But people don't really realize who Nikola Tesla was. He was probably the greatest inventor who ever lived, really. And he.
How did you get into the aliens then? Did you have an experience with UFOs or anything like that?
No, not really. I see myself as a researcher and an author. Archaeology is really my specialty.
Yes.
I've not had any really extraordinary UFO experiences, honestly.
Yeah.
But I've always been interested in the subject.
Yeah.
And early on, when I grew up in the 60s and then in 70s, I graduated from high school in 1975.
Yeah.
But so I read Eric von Däniken's books, Chariots of the Gods, and his other books, Gold of the Gods, The Bermuda Triangle by Charles Berlitz, and I would read all kinds of books on unexplained phenomenon, Bigfoot, UFOs, psychic phenomenon, Tibet type stuff, Tesla, Atlantis, all those kind of things.
I saw you on Ancient Aliens when you went to the Nazca Lines with
Georgia.
Yeah. Yes. Now those, it's one thing I really want to go and see. I just can't wait to get there. But they must be fascinating, aren't they?
Yeah, oh sure. And I love to travel, and that's more my specialty, traveling all over the world. I've always been interested in the unusual things, the unexplained. And archaeology and unexplained things, and Eric von Däniken and other authors, brought a lot of these sites out to investigate, and so I wanted to go see them myself. I've been to South America many times.
Pumapunku, you've been to Pumapunku?
Oh yes, yeah, sure.
They are fascinating, those H stones.
Those H blocks and stuff,
I think there's lots of them. Are there lots of them out there? In pictures, you only see a few.
You see a few, but there were more than you see. And those blocks would fit together, and they're granite blocks, and they're highly articulated the way that they're cut.
Yeah.
And I maintain in my books that the makers of Pumapunku and Tiwanaku and the towers around Lake Titicaca, even the structures at Cuzco and Ollantaytambo and Machu Picchu,
yeah,
that these megalithic structures are made with power tools,
yeah,
where they had, you know, diamond cutting, even lasers to cut it, with those H blocks.
Yeah.
It would be a computer-aided design that's cutting those blocks.
Exactly.
I mean, they're
same.
Not being cut by hand, yeah. And,
yeah,
and just the technology to do it, and then to perfectly fit these blocks, and to, in many cases, they're building with granite blocks that are weighing 10 to 20 to, 80 tons.
Amazing.
And more, yeah. Obelisks around the world, a typical obelisk weighs about 500 tons. Why are people building with such large blocks of stone?
What's the most interesting archaeological discovery that you've seen?
Well, gosh, I've seen many. One of the most amazing places in the world that most people have never heard of is this giant city in the Pacific. It's on a Micronesian island. It's called Nan Madol. Nan Madol is a giant city built into the ocean. Much of it's underwater, and it's 100 artificial islands. They estimate there's over 250 million tons of basalt that's stacked up in the island. Yeah, the natives on the island, they say that those blocks were flown through the air and put where they are. And there's so much material there that entire mountains would be dismantled for all that material, 250 million tons of basalt. They don't know where that basalt even came from. I mean, there are places on the island where it could have come from, but in fact, entire mountains would have been dismantled just to create all that material. There's so much material. It's astonishing when you see it. I mean, you can't really explain it. And when the natives say that they levitated the blocks, I mean, you can believe it, because it's about the only way they could have built that city.
That's fantastic. David, you've got people lining up to see you. I have to let you go. I could talk to you for ages.
All right, well, thanks.
So
it was
much.
Great
Thank
talking
you.
To you. Yeah, right. Good luck on right. your show.
Rick Smith, and I've got a YouTube channel, but I've been filming things at the minute. But I'll just tell you about one. When it's in 2003, it was Perranporth Beach in Cornwall, and I was surfing, clear day. I looked up, it's quite high. I don't know what altitude it was. It was perfectly black triangle, no lights in it, nothing, no other outstanding features, you know, just a black triangle. But behind it, it wasn't even moving that quick. Behind it was like a greyish metallic looking sphere which was traveling at the same speed, and I just watch it disappear off to the horizon.
My name is Matt Blakey, aka the Cupcake Man from the Custom Cupcake Company. We were just talking and discussing. I said my wife's here at the event because she is obsessed,
yeah,
but I've seen she's not.
Really?
So yeah, I was in Stoke-on-Trent about 15 years ago. It's
yeah.
actually bonfire night, which is a crazy thing.
Yeah.
Now over the skies, over Stoke, I saw probably something the length of 6 double-decker buses.
You're kidding.
And I thought at first, is it a blimp? So I rang the police and they said we'd had 4 or 5 reports. I said, is it a blimp? They said, it's bonfire night. We're not flying blimps. No one's flying blimps.
Yeah.
And it went from the size of a 3 double-decker bus, whatever it was, huge, to nothing in seconds, just disappeared. Now also, I come from Southwest Wales, Pembrokeshire,
yeah,
which is renowned for being a rubbing hotspot. And at the time, I used to like to partake because I'm a surfer.
Yeah.
I was into my little bit of herb. So I had a little spliff on the beach. I was sitting there on my own, listening to the water. I looked out over the water and it looked like the sun over the water, great big glowing ball. And again, that went from nothing, straight away, ping, gone, straight across the water.
Oh, really?
So I'd say I've definitely seen.
So you know immediately you see something, don't you, that's not this earthly world. Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah. Certain things you look, you think, is that a plane? Could it be this, could be that?
But when you see something,
hell yes. And there was no thinking, oh, it might be this. No, I know what it saw. It was big. It was massive, and it moved super fast.
Yeah, I seen one that moved super fast, and I'm like, oh, my God, I've just seen a UFO,
Anybody who thinks we're on this planet on our own now is pure ignorance, because at the end of the day, they say the space is infinite, infinitive. So if you think about it, it's almost impossible there not to be anything else out there.
Oh, yeah. I think anybody who does think is very small-minded. They think that it would also be very sad if we were on a planet on our own and nothing else.
Exactly.
That would be worse.
You look at a few hundred years ago, they thought the Earth was flat.
Yeah.
Things don't change. Unfortunately, people's minds are set in certain ways. If you continuously tell someone something doesn't exist, after a while they start to believe it. Whereas the other way around, if you educate people, and the internet will do that, the internet will start to educate the human race, because you can't stop it now.
No, you can't stop it now. So much evidence, and there's so many people like here today. It's fantastic. I love it. Have you been to any of these before?
We did it last year. Last year was good. I was more skeptical last year.
Yeah.
But from what I've spoken to, what I've seen, I did the panel yesterday with the ancient aliens, all of them together.
Oh, yeah.
And that was phenomenal. It was just like, it was like mind blowing.
I wish I'd come yesterday.
It was fantastic. I mean, you guys follow the ancient aliens series.
Yeah.
And every time I watch it now with my wife in bed, I just say, well, first of all, my goodness, this is crazy talk.
Yeah.
I can't believe how it's. There's so much out there, so many things.
So
that
much information.
You can't debunk it. They can't debunk it now. And the beauty of this is, again, to go back to the internet, when you have something as powerful as the internet and everyone talks, the government now has to look at things, right? We have to start educating people, because it won't be long before everyone knows.
And we have to rewrite history.
Of course you have. Yeah, exactly. We used to think that Africa was the origin of the human race. They've now discovered an older Homo sapien in Greece. So this has just totally blown that out of the water. So you think Earth, everything came from Africa? No. No.
You've got to rewrite it. Gosh, your wife must be really jealous she hasn't seen anything.
No, exactly. She will. I believe she will.
She will,
I think we all will. A couple more years, they'll probably show their faces.
Yeah, I hope so.
I think one of them is running America at the moment, Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah, he is, isn't he?
Nice meeting you guys.
Much.
Take care. Thank you.
My name's Tracy. I lived in Scarborough at the time. And I'd just gone to pick my sister up at the train station. So I was driving down the road leading into Scarborough Town Centre, and my sister pointed out the lights in the sky. Now, I've had experiences before, so I pulled over in the car and I said, oh, we have to go out. You know, so we got out of the car to observe, crossed over at road, and there were some ladies sat down on a bench. It was dark, so they were just having a cuppa. And this was looking out to sea. So the lights were orange, and they're coming towards us now. So my sister's looking at one perspective, and I'm looking at another. But what happened then was the whole thing lit up, and it was huge. It was a proper solid craft. Underneath it was translucent colours, pinks, purples, blues. It was like a shimmery, watery bubble underneath. It was so beautiful. But round the structure of it was like golden balls. Now, that's what we first seen. So it just looked like orbs in the sky. But when it revealed itself, them orbs become apparent. That was the outline of the craft. But it must have... I can't give a description of size, but like when people say 2 or 3 football fields, like that's how big it was, because it stretched out to the lighthouse and it was above us. So a parking attendant said, to me, "Oh, you're gonna have to move your car because I've parked on yellow lines." I said, "Bloody hell, this is a UFO. Never mind that." You know, but nobody could see it apart from me and my sister, which I found. I thought, "Did we just see that or what?" Because it just went into pitch blackness then. Anyway, reported it, and which was give credit to our account because, unbeknown to us, it had been seen coming along the coast, and other people had been phoning it in. So that sort of gave us our credit then to what we'd actually seen. But that was in 2014. In Scarborough. And then we've seen the orange, me and my daughter, and
coming through like sliders.
Three other people, so which are members of family. Beautiful orange arms, which were very low down. Again, I couldn't give a description of size, but they were most beautiful, and they were just above a pub called the Crown Tavern. And they were moving in beautiful synchronicity, but they were like huge, like suns have come down from the sky. But they were both together, and like I say, they did this like little dance, like up and down and across. And it's like they knew we were there and was observing us. They had intelligence. And we were just all stood in on going, "Oh my God," and nobody got cameras out or anything. It's something you don't think about. I don't know where it is at the time, you just don't do it. But and they just like gracefully started floating off above the rooftops. But they weren't like little orbs, I'm talking massive. So like people, because it was the main street in Scarborough, people were like reporting it in. So we, again, we want the other, we want the only other ones that had seen them.
Right, I'm here with Alexis Brooks, who has a podcast called Higher Journeys with Alexis Brooks.
Correct.
Alexis, lovely to meet you.
Likewise.
I want to know about your podcast.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll tell you, probably the easiest way to describe it is the venue that we're in, the people that you're hearing from on stage today, are my guests. Typically, you know, I've done a lot in the field of ufology, but I think it spans the spectrum of consciousness. That's such a broad subject these days, a broad talking point. So I started really in more of a mean of metaphysical, paranormal. Somehow I found myself entering the field of ufology, entering the world of ufology. I really don't know how it happened.
It seems like there's a great connection.
As I say constantly, they're all inextricably linked. We're all inextricably linked to them. So I found, you know, that I was doing more of this sort of work. Now, I will tell you, my entry point into ufology is more on the experiential, because I find that fascinating. And when you talk about the experiential and consciousness, now we're talking about something, the rabbit hole is infinitely deep, right? So so I've really enjoyed expanding, you know, these fields. And it's been about, Higher Journeys has been, I started out with a podcast called Conscious Inquiry, and then it sort of morphed into Higher Journeys. I started with a blog, higherjourneys.blogspot.com. That morphed into a more broad-based website, and then the show, Higher Journeys Radio, was born about, 5 or 6 years ago.
So are you based out of America?
I am. I'm based in the Boston area.
Oh, in Boston. Oh,
I am.
Love
right
Boston.
On the other side of the pond.
Oh, lovely.
just on the other side of the pond. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, great. Yeah. And you, so you come, have you been to lots of these kind of
Never
things?
Here. This is, well, I, that's not true. I actually came over and filmed some shows last September. And one of my colleagues, Mary Rodwell, who I work very closely with, was speaking at High Elms Manor in Watford. So I got to see her speak there, but I came over primarily to film shows. But this is my first conference here in the UK, and I love it.
Well, it's
absolutely
great.
Love it.
Yeah. So what else have you got coming up then? You're just doing your Higher Journeys podcast.
No, I've got a few balls in the air. I lecture as well.
Oh,
I lectured in Uluru, Australia, last January.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to be invited back, so I'll be going back to Uluru to speak again for the Cosmic Consciousness Conference. And that was a lovely thing. You know, it's so great to be able to span the globe talking about these things. And what we discover is we're all really looking, not all, but within this spectrum of subject matter, we're all really looking at the same thing, wanting the same questions answered.
Yeah.
So when you get to go to the other side of the world and speak to a group that you think may be different in some way, and you discover we're all seekers, we're all looking. I think we're really looking to find out who we are.
Yes.
That's what I've said.
I'm pretty sure about that.
So I'm really lucky that I get a chance to travel. And, you know, it's great doing the podcast. I was saying to someone recently, or today actually, you know, our social medias are great. This is how we live our lives these days. But there's nothing like seeing looking into a person's eyes and having a conversation and discovering our similarities and not our differences. So I'm really lucky to be able to travel along with doing the show. So
how did it all start for you?
Oh, my gosh. That's a long story. I always say, I think I came out of my mother's tummy with these questions on my mind. I've always been inquisitive. Long story short, I had parents, God bless them, that were left-brain professions, but when they took their professional hat off, they were always wanting to talk about these subjects, ask big questions, and they nurtured it in me. I was very lucky.
Oh, isn't that fantastic?
Very lucky, and especially at the time, you didn't see that too often.
Yeah.
So, and coupled with that, like, not unlike other people, we have experiences. I was having experiences as a child, precognition and dreams that were primarily precognitive and other sorts of things. And I think I think the difference with me, perhaps, and many others, because I really feel that most, if not all of us, are having an experience or two at one time or another, I didn't shove it in a box. I wanted to see what was going on. So I've always said, I want to explore the true nature of reality, because I think we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg here. So,
yeah, so do I.
So it started there. And, you know, I started in mainstream media in 1986 in sports broadcasting.
Oh, you did?
So I went through several iterations of journalism. I was trained as a journalist.
Yeah.
From, you know, the entertainment world to sports to some news. But in the background, I had always been looking into these things as a researcher and as an experiencer. And when the opportunity presented itself, and of course our medias have changed, the platforms have changed, and now we can do what we
want.
Now
we can speak openly.
It's interesting. We're speaking openly. We won't get into that. There's some people that want to slap us on the hand for some of the things that we talk about. But it's a different environment, certainly.
It's different now. I find that 10 years ago, we wouldn't be able to. I wouldn't have been here. Well,
right.
Wiz wouldn't have been here. And I wouldn't have been able to do my podcast and speak to people want to come and speak to me on my podcast so openly. It's great.
Yeah,
I love that. I think the world is changing.
The world is most certainly changing.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you very briefly, I had a colleague who's unfortunately passed away, gosh, probably a dozen or so years ago, that I worked with in mainstream media. And I'll never forget, I had a conversation with her just prior to her passing, and she said, Alexis, wouldn't it be great if we could start a show on our own and not have to report to the general manager about what we're talking about? Because we both worked in mainstream journalism. And she never really got to see this come to fruition. So every time I have a conversation like this, like with you, and think about how broad our medias have become, I think of Marcia. So wish she could have participated. So I'm blessed to see
a paradigm shift. I'm sure she's here.
At some level, absolutely.
I'm absolutely sure she's here.
Yeah. So it's gratifying. I feel like I'm the luckiest girl in the world to do what I do. What can I say?
Yeah, I think you are. Well, I'm definitely going to listen to your podcast.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And ditto, likewise.
Yeah, that'd
for sure.
be great.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
I appreciate
Thanks
it.
To me.
So my name is Yolanda Vibas. You can find me on Instagram under UF Yo Designs. And I've been painting aliens since I was about 6, I would say.
Have you?
Yeah, from really, really young. I used to be able to like see entities in the room really clearly. I used to just draw what I could see, but I was really obsessed with it. Like every single book I had was covered in like alien doodles, to the point of where the teachers in my school got me to see a child therapist because they thought it was weird how much I could not stop like channeling and drawing these things. So as I've got older and come out of the schooling system, have I just kind of been able to run wild? So that's.
Do you still see your entities now? Oh, you do?
Yeah, I went through a period from when I was 16 to 22 when I didn't. Yeah. And I think that was due to like hitting puberty and being confused with like where I was supposed to fit in. And I feel like I kind of blocked the channel. Yeah. And then when I was 22 and I really fell back into myself, did it all just start coming back from my peripheral view? It's like seeping around the corners and.
Oh, yeah. Really? How fantastic. Gosh, I'd love to be able to do that. Yeah. So you just paint them instead and you know what you see. Yeah. So you've seen them that look like this?
Yeah. I've seen them. I see them in my dream states. I see them meditating. Oh, I write music as well. So some of the music that I write is about what I can see.
Oh, how wonderful. So describe this one for me.
Okay, so this one is kind of like a green... otherworldly being, should I say. But it's this one, I see it as being green because it's trying to look after the planet. It's very much so, it's got a kind of like psychedelic twist to it. It's like enveloped in psilocybin mushrooms, which is what's connecting it to the Earth. And it's trying to give its vision from its third eye to the Earth as to how for us to reduce the harm on the planet and reduce plastic waste. Reduce emissions. It's a green being. It cares about the
environment. And I'm sure there are beings out there that really want us to look after this planet, and I'm convinced about that.
Yeah.
And I think that's why so many people are standing up now and trying to save it, because we must be getting messages, come on guys, sort your planet out. I really think so.
My name's Gary James Kenny. I'm from Stockport, Manchester. Where it is, long time ago, I was in my late 20s, man, I'm 34 now, but when I was about, say, 26, 27, 28, say, but the first time when I saw a UFO, at the time when my girl was alive, I could see something in the back window, so I looked up, and it's like thunder lightning at the time, so as I looked out, I seen like these objects, and I thought, what the hell's that? It was falling across the sky left to right, and then it veered like a zigzag shape, and it went off. And then a couple of years after, I thought, this can't be happening. I seen another one. I was in the front garden, put something in the bin, and I seen this black oval UFO. And I thought, that can't be a UFO. And it just stuck there, because every time I was at the door, it seen me. So if I moved, it moved. So I looked up again, and I seen it, and it popped up like a little radar, like a sky dish. And it had like a signal to it. So the satellite dish, sky dish, went back into the UFO, and it was like a zigzag like that, like a zigzag, but back in. And then it just reared to the right, reared to the left. And then, for some reason, I looked again, it just went.
So I'm talking to Barry Fitzgerald at the Awakening Conference in Manchester. Hi, Barry.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for talking to me. What I want to know from you is, how did it all begin?
Oh my goodness. I think for me, going back to a point back in Ireland where I grew up as a child, you know, I was introduced to this phenomenon. And granted, I started my path within the world of the paranormal. But then over the course of years, I began to see a pattern develop which was to steer my way clear of the paranormal and look at a broader picture.
Yeah.
And by doing that, then I was able to connect the dots and this phenomena that was being reported globally under a different perception, a different mask almost, but the phenomena remained the same. And by identifying that, we started to peel back the layers of the onion and find a signature which was identical all the way back through thousands of years of our history.
Oh really, that's so fascinating. And for the people that hadn't seen your talk today, can you give me like a brief sort of, in a sort of nutshell, of
sure,
what, just a little bit of what you said today, because it was fascinating.
Well, for us, we were here talking about the UITC course. It's a new course designed for people who are interested in adapting their techniques of studying ufology, the paranormal, and cryptozoology. It's a broad spectrum course, which looks at all of the different components which we have identified. Not only do we address the safety of the researcher, because this is vital. We have to address the safety of the researcher before they go out into the field. Because there are elements to this particular phenomena which can potentially cause harm. So we need to look at the safety of the researcher first. Then we go out and we identify key areas which are more potent than other areas around the world. And we're using technology, modern technology today, to understand where these areas are and the phenomena which can happen in these areas.
So it's identifying that magnetic force.
That's exactly right. Yeah. We're looking at magnetics here. And that's the key to a lot of the things. A lot of the new modern technology that we are creating, we have the patents for those now from the US Patent Office, which describes craft now, advanced flying craft, which defy the normal laws of physics as we know it.
Yeah.
But is now being produced, and these craft are utilizing magnetics to do what they do and steer throughout our atmosphere and out of it.
Yeah, I've always believed that magnetics are the key to our new travel. Even from when I was quite young, you know, the way that force between two magnets happens and things like that. So on a large, humongous scale, that's got to be, it's all about magnetics, isn't it?
There is an element to that. Now, we got to understand we live in the technical age. And what we are creating sometimes is better than what they have created. And they, I mean, from the other side of this realm, through these doorways, these dimensional doorways that open, and these things come back and through from these specific areas we've identified with the use of magnetics. Now, from our perspective, trying to disseminate what we've created and what they have created is a minefield in its own. But with the use of the satellites, we can identify these areas in which they do come through. Problem being that a lot of the things that they have done, for instance, if we're sitting at home and we set down a remote control for the television and we go back to it and we say, oh, for God's sake, where has that gone? I don't know where it is. I set it there and it's gone. The replacement of that device is not exact. Those are called apports. When the device is left back, it vanishes and is left back, it is called an apport. Now, when these are left back, the targeting is not actually quite precise. But what we were able to do is through the use of microscopes and everything else and understand what was being produced, these things that were taken from us and are left back are not the same.
Well, they're not.
These are different.
Many times I've gone, I know I left that somewhere, and then, there it is.
I know of cases where TV remotes have gone missing, and they never came back. They found them in a cavity wall when they were remodeling the house. The targeting was way off, but the thing is, why are they doing this? We believe, and we're still working with this, but we believe that what they are doing is creating a link between us and them. But these objects that they're taking are so unimportant to us that we don't understand.
For them, it's important.
It's important to create a link from our world to theirs. They leave back a device which is a copy. That's exceptionally important to understand.
They've got the real thing.
How many people does this happen to around the planet?
Yeah, it's happened to me.
Little monitoring devices that we have just no idea about.
They must be coming back home and saying, look, darling, look what I've got you. She says, oh my God, that's fantastic. We'll put the copy back. I mean, it's amazing to hear the amount. I didn't realise the amount of people that go missing.
Yes.
Never to be seen again.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's scary.
David Paldies is an amazing researcher in the United States. He has done a lot of work in the Missing 411 series of books about people who have disappeared, children a lot, within the state parks in the US. Now, for our work, what we see is that there's a correlation between David's work and our work. We're seeing there's a connection with these magnetic anomalies. Now, not only do we find disappearances of people in the magnetic anomalies, we also find mutilations. We also find disappearances, we find UFO phenomena, we find Bigfoot phenomena, we find various other cryptids that appear in these magnetic anomalies. Skinwalker Ranch is one of these places where this huge magnetic anomaly sits over the top of the ranch. But not only that ranch, we see other areas that this magnetic anomaly influences.
What about that flight that disappeared?
The MH370.
all those people, never found a trace of that plane.
Very mysterious one. Though there have been some wreckage that has now started to appear on the shores. Yeah.
I was hoping that and they'd all disappeared to another planet.
It would be absolutely wonderful that they were all fine. However, some footage has now started to appear.
Shame.
But the person who has been finding the footage is being attacked. And that I find strange. Why are they trying to cover this up? It doesn't make any sense.
Something so mysterious about that whole flight disappearing.
Oh, absolutely.
Something went on there that I also see
that there was a 90 kilogram container was added to the shipping of within the shipping of MH370 after the plane disappeared. Now, what was that about? So it is very strange. Very strange.
So, yeah, you were talking about the animals and the mutilation of animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I find that really... look at these aliens going... I mean, spacemen. That is interesting that they mutilate the animals. I suppose they just want their DNA or...
It's not necessarily that. Our research seems to indicate that there is a problem with... an immune system. There's an immune system situation going on, and has been for quite some time, because when they take the animals, they're targeting the mucous membranes. Now, to activate the mucous membranes, the animal has to be alive.
Oh, really?
And it's also the same for us. For us, when we become frightened, our mucous membranes activate. So all the areas to the inside of the body start producing a lot of mucus. And that is what they seem to be targeting.
It's been lovely talking to you, Barry.
Thank you. You too.
And it's been great.
I just loved it there. It was so great. My thanks to everyone at Awakening for making me feel so welcome. And I can't wait to go again next year. Next week, I'll have more from Awakening when I speak to Bruce and Daniela Fenton, who I've been wanting to talk to for so long and get on my show, ever since we started, in fact. Okay, till next week.